morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 21st of September, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Alex Vanderwill, getting out of the studio so I can do something else.
Have fun, then.
Bye-bye.
Alex, God bless her, is doing 16 things at once today. It is another Buffalo Bills Sunday, so we are web only, and consequently, she is the one-armed paper hanger today, and that's what she's doing.
Many talents running between studios.
She is that. And those of you who are listening to this live on Wham, we aren't. As Steve said earlier,
we are
recording this at 10:30 in the morning. It will play at 1. So we are looking forward to being in Second Life, and you've already either seen it or missed it. Those are your two choices right there. And before we go any farther, we need to acknowledge yet one more momentous event. September right. is our month. It is our birthdays.
For Sound Bites, even, too.
Right, right. And it is the birthday of one of our members who has reached a milestone. Dr. Enright?
Yep.
That milestone is?
6-0.
The big 6-0.
But only in base 10.
Right, only in base 10. In base 16, he's younger, but in binary, holy cow. All right, so here we go. Let's start with our poll. We'll talk a little bit about the poll. Every week, as you know, we do a poll at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll, the question, what's the best start time for Sound Bites in Second Life? As you know, we are doing Second Life every Friday night. 261 of you voted, making number 272 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. And the winner, can't browse the web, says can't get anywhere. I've lost you, Steve.
Yeah, I'm setting it up.
Steve has, here in the studio, we're in flux here, of course, because we're in the wrong studio, and there's all this and that going on as far as...
Well, we're going to be moving within, the next 3 to 4 months, because Midtown to ours is coming down, so we're going over to the HSBC building, I believe it is.
Yeah, maybe.
And
who
Steve
knows?
And I are back to sharing microphone.
For the next few weeks, so we're in the we're in our old studio where we originally started out, but there's no network connection here, so Steve has graciously set up and then taken down and is now setting up again his MacBook in order to share networking. We see, I'm not on.
Be back up.
All right, while he's still doing that, why don't I bring up this other item? This coming Saturday... For you folks, if you're trying to get rid of, you've got these old TVs, and old computers and all that type of stuff, and, it's one of those things that, by law, you're not supposed to just throw it out to the dumpster, or throw it into your trash and all that and get it into the landfill. Well, to help you with that, and you're trying to get rid of it, this coming Saturday, that's the 27th, from 10 to 2, members of a Girl Scout troop, 392, will be working with a recycling company in Webster. So from 9 to 2, if you go to the highway department at 1005 Pitcher Parkway, you can get rid of all your electronics that you can't throw into the trash. So if you've got that old laptop or that big, huge 20-inch monitor, it's just a doorstop right now, or those old computers or printers, and looking for a way to get rid of it, definitely. You want to go over there and check it. It's, again, Saturday the 27th from 10 to 2. For the Girl Scout Group 392 at the Highway Department at 1005 Pitcher Parkway. But if you miss that, because timing and everything else is only a week away, need a little more time to go up in the attic or down the basement and stuff. On Saturday, October 20th from 9 to 1 in Webster Community Center at 985 Ebner Drive, they're going to have another chance to get rid of your electronics. There will be a $10 surcharge for each TV and monitor, and all the proceeds will benefit the Webster Health and Education Network. If you have any questions, call 458-2460.
That number in Bayonne?
458-2460.
Now, of course, this really is only for our folks in Rochester, New York, our Norway contingent. the Norway enclave of sound bites. That's not going to do you any good unless you're willing to get on a plane with your old computer equipment and recycle it here. That's probably an easier way to do that somewhere in Norway.
Find your own local recycling center.
Exactly.
You know, I put it out to the curb. Lori and I now take bets. We'll put something on the curb. We'll take bets. So I can put out an old monitor, old PCs, right, that type of stuff. Gone in an hour or two.
I put some stuff out to the curb one day, and then I was talking to the neighbor and coming back toward my house, and some guy had already stopped. I mean, it was like 5 minutes. Some guy had already stopped, and he looked at it, and he said, "Look at these people threw away a perfectly good computer." I said, "I'm pretty sure that's an empty case." He says, "No, it's a computer." "No, I'm pretty sure that's an empty case."
It's an empty computer case.
Well,
you
yeah,
have to
but
be specific for some
well,
people.
Well, yeah. So he said, "No, this is a computer." I said, "Go, fine."
But actually,
he said, "It's mine. I'm taking it." He apparently thought that I was trying to convince him it was empty, so he would leave it and I could take it.
Yep. Although
he was really quite angry with me.
I've heard a lot of stories where that does happen. Someone's computer is broken, so they just set it out in front of the house because they think it's going to cost too much to fix or something like that. Someone comes along, picks it up, and plugs a wire back in, and they have a full working computer and all that person's data.
Well, exactly.
A lot of stories about SpinRite recovering data from a supposedly dead hard drive.
Right.
Thrown in dumpsters behind office buildings with all
right.
the data still
right.
on them.
Right. At the College of Business, the E. Philip Saunders College of Business, we do a program called Kill Disk. So anytime there's a dead computer that we're really, truly going to throw away, first we take out the hard drives. Yeah. And then we run Kill Disk on them, which apparently is a government standard killing. It's only about like a $70 program or whatever it is.
10-ton press?
That'll do it. But then you can't really
bits.
Reuse the drive.
Well, yeah, if you know you're getting rid of it. Well, see, that now for broken drives, that's if it doesn't
mount enough,
doesn't spin up. And
no, this one's out to the trash.
Yeah, right. Very funny.
It's trash, not a garage sale.
Yeah, exactly.
there's a very subtle difference between those two. But
you take it. You got to get rid of it. Don't bring it back to my front door.
Yeah, right. Right. We've seen the results of that. I mean, we have people who... just they pick up old machines and they turn them into such useful devices, you know? Mm-hmm. For somebody who hasn't got a machine, an older machine is just fine.
I mean, if all they're going to do is word processing and that type of stuff, and they're still on dial-up, which a number of folks still
are.
You know?
Right. But you do...
Too fast that, oh, everybody's got
right.
high-speed connection. They've
right.
got Fios.
Right? I want files. I want files. Verizon.
Colluding. If all of the internet providers decide to put caps on it, obviously they
And
colluded.
If anyone in an area doesn't drive out and keep the drive, even if you're never going to use it again, unless you're going to run something like Kill Disk on it or physically destroy it, you're safer just throwing that drive in a closet somewhere.
Yeah, for somebody that wants to take the time, you can piecemeal dead computers on eBay and make a few bucks.
Right.
But there's a lot of time on that. As long as you make sure you say it's a broken this or a broken that or not tested and you know, sell it as pieces.
What machine is it that's new nowadays? It's one of the netbooks. Is it Asus or Wind? One of them, people are finding company documents and pictures of various sorts.
Refurbished or reconditioned or what was that word someone used last week? Decommissioned, non-serialized. It was like, you know, a company got rid of all their computers.
Right.
And so HP, you know, if they were HP computers, strips all their labels off and resells them.
Right.
Apparently it's the company's job to remove their own data from it, and they're not.
Yeah, right. But these are brand new machines people are buying. And they've got somebody, the image somewhere had been used for data. And so now the real question is, okay, does that thing have some sort of virus on it? I mean, if their standards aren't rigorous enough to make sure they don't get their own company documents out on the drive, how rigorous are they in terms of viruses and stuff? That's the thing that worries me.
There have been cases of viruses getting caught inside of duplicating facilities.
Right.
So somebody like HP or, you know, Apple, you know, they ship 20,000 computers a day. Someone's duplicating hard drives and putting OSs on them.
Right.
So you get a virus in that facility, you're stuck.
Right.
And then a couple of weeks ago, it was the iPhone iPhone girl from the Chinese factory where they were making the iPhone. You know, she took a picture. You know, doing a peace sign before they put it back in the final box.
Yep. Well, at any rate, back to our poll, since Steve now has us online. What's the best time to start? Well, half of you couldn't care less because you don't do Second Life. But the consensus, by not much, seems to be 9 p.m. Most of the other votes are fairly well clustered, but 9 p.m. seems to be the start time. We'll have to discuss that.
Well, I'm almost thinking maybe we'll do this coming week, our usual time.
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. And then that way we can give folks fair warning.
Because you've also got to change all the stuff. But we still haven't discussed whether or not 9 o'clock fits into our lives either. You know, there comes a point at which my family is going to say, you know, maybe we should spend some time together.
Does it work to split the difference, Nick?
We could start it in a half hour, absolutely. But we'll see. We'll talk about it after the show. That's neither.
Stay tuned, and we will post it in the events calendar. Of course, I send out anybody that is into the Soundbites group there in Second Life. I send out a notice every Friday morning.
Right.
I got that on my tick that I have to sit there. Goodness, I wish that's something you could automate.
Yeah.
But you can't. You got to put in each one at a time. But it's no biggie. I got a note there now and just pop it out. So, I can do a group notice that way and then change it in the events calendar, too. That's, again, no problem.
The other thing to note, however, is that if you are not able to do Second Life or not willing to do Second Life, I've created a program that will let you follow the typed conversations via the web. You can sign in with a username. Right now, it just truly lets you use any name. I kind of have to fix that, I suppose. But you can put in a name and then follow the conversations along. It automatically updates, so you see the conversations within a second or two of them being posted, and then you can type stuff in and it will be answered. And if we pick up something off the web, if a question comes in off the web, we will answer it with typing. Because the problem is you won't hear voice. And I haven't figured out a way around that yet, because the folks who run Second Life, Linden Labs, they're really not into letting you take the voice and do stuff with it. But
well, this has grown so much.
Yeah.
I think it's even overwhelming the Lindens, you know. And
they've been having a lot of little troubles lately.
And I mean, you know, because it's growing so.
Yeah.
For us, you know, we too soon we forget. Something like this just didn't exist a number of years ago. It's what? They just celebrated their fifth birthday.
Right.
And what you can do in it versus what they first started with is monumental.
Yeah, and Lolly and I were talking about this last night. Some of the things that they've done to increase presence, like the ability to add better skins and better avatars, and the simple fact that your mouth now moves when you talk. I mean, those are the things that enhance the experience in your head and therefore enhance the experience in Second Life.
But take up much more processing power at their end and our end.
Well, one of the things they're trying to do is put most of it at your end. For example, all particle effects happen on your machine. They don't happen in Second Life. The mouth-moving thing happens at your end, not in Second Life. They're getting smart enough now to distribute more and more of that stuff whenever they can, and that makes a whole lot of sense.
But then raises the minimum requirements for you on your machine.
Yes, it does.
But going from one person, 19 to 20, I mean, like you say, the voice movement and everything else, that's only... when I say 19 to 20, that's 1.19 to 1.20. It's not like they were...
Right.
They're still on version 1.20. They haven't even hit 2 yet.
Right.
So, I mean, the stuff is growing so much, and what you can do in it is unbelievable.
And because it's not open source, they're stuck with X number of programmers doing all the fixing and doing. So it takes a little more time. Anyway, this week's poll is about a story from online that I was looking at. And the question is, how secure are your passwords? And the choices are hyper secure, pretty secure, I have no idea, probably unsecure, and who cares? And so far, we have... I've come to hate my computers over time. This is good. This is good radio. Yep. We have 55 votes so far, pretty secure. 51% of you said pretty secure. The honest people, 22% of you said I have no idea. 5 of you lied and said hyper secure.
I still like that program for doing security in that. It's called RoboForm.
Yep.
And it will sit there and literally create a password, you know, and it's fully encrypted for you. And the only key thing is there you just have to periodically, which we tell folks anyways, do backups. You back up that folder, and I do this weekly now. Backup folder, because in case I add any passwords. And there's some obscure numbers and letter sequences and everything else that nobody would ever figure out that it... Because I print off a list just in case.
Well, see, now that makes it less secure. But, you know, as you've read... go ahead.
So if you're looking for a way to create secure passwords, Steve Gibson at Gibson Research Company.
Right.
In fact, if you're interested in security, you should be listening to his podcast, Security
right.
Now. He has a one-time password generation utility on his website that generates a 256-bit random password for you.
Right. And that's pretty useful.
Pretty useful, yeah. And really secure.
Well, one thing I learned a long time ago, and this was from my father-in-law, who was chief of police in Syracuse. What most folks don't do is, like, their valuables and all that, usually they keep it, like, in the bedroom and that type of stuff. He said the best thing to do is take your valuables, you put them in a box, either put them up down the basement or up in the attic. A thief will never go rummaging through a basement or an attic.
Now they will.
But they got to know where to go. If your attic or basement is like mine...
Yeah, I could lose my valuables pretty easily. I'd never see them again, much less anybody else.
The thief could get lost in either one of those
yeah.
places. So.
There was a cool TV show on one of the networks called It Takes a Thief, where they have reformed
right.
thieves
right.
casing
yeah.
houses, and then they tell the people, we're going to break into your house, and then give them a security system at the end. One guy had a safe. I thought he was safe. The thieves for the TV show brought in a dolly, carted the safe out in the back of a truck, and drove it away.
Right,
so
man.
They could crack it at their leisure.
Right, exactly.
So now the new safe is bolted to the floor.
Right. Well, as you know, for those of you who follow any sort of non-computer news, you know that Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin had her Yahoo email account broken into. So a bunch of the messages and pictures that were in it were posted online. And the way people broke into it was not by getting her password, but by guessing her safety question. Most of these online services have a safety question in case you forget your password. And the question is something like, where was my first house? What's your favorite sports team? You know, things like that. The problem is, now, Sarah Palin, of course, is now a public figure because she's running for vice president. But even for regular people, there's so much of your information out on the internet. For example, one of the questions is, you know, where did you meet your spouse? Well, I can't tell you the number of times I've read a blog somewhere where somebody talked about it, and I met my husband, or I met my wife, yada, yada, yada. Well, there's your answer, you know? The thing you should do is pick, and the problem is there's only so many questions, right? I mean, you only get a choice of questions. On Yahoo, it's 9. Someplace else, it's other numbers. So
I like
one
the ones
of the
where
things
you make
can,
up your own questions.
Well, that's nicer. But, for example, what was your high school mascot? Well, if I know where you went to high school, I know what the mascot is, right? On the other hand, what if you answer that question obliquely? For example, your high school mascot makes you think of that math teacher you hated. You answer with his or her name.
Yeah.
Right? So it's related, but it's not the answer to the question. And so that makes you at least that much safer. Now, if they have to go afield... the field gets pretty big pretty quick, so that can help. The other thing is when you pick a password, be smart. Don't use a word. Don't use a phrase. For God's sake, don't use your dog's name or your boyfriend or your favorite sports team or your car.
Or your ham radio call sign.
Or your ham radio call sign or any of those things. You used to tell people use Happy 34 Monkey, remember? But that's no longer. Now, those they've got crackers that'll do that. There's a thing called Rainbow Tables. I boot your machine with this CD, and it'll crack an XP or NT or Windows 2000 or 2003 or 2008 password in seconds. Up to 14 characters. And they're working on 17 now.
Yeah, 17 characters takes minutes.
Yeah, it takes yeah, a minute. Yeah, right. So one of the things that you can do, and that I've learned recently works very, very well, you take lyrics to a poem, lyrics to a song or a poem or, you know, a saying that you like or whatever, and you take the first letter of each of those words. You capitalize a couple of them, like if there's two M's in it, you capitalize the M's, or you know, whatever makes sense to you. And anytime you see an I, it's a 1, an O is a 0, an A is a 4, an S is a dollar sign, right? If you make it fairly long, not like a stitch in time saves 9, that's 6 characters, that just doesn't do you any good.
But one of the ones that I always use for my demonstration, and is not actually one of my passwords, so don't bother. I write down this thing, and it's all tismicalicum with ones and fours and capital G's and things in it. And it's the first two lines from a poem by Robert W. Service called The Cremation of Sam McGee. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. And it's real easy to type T, there, A, R, well, four for A, S for strange, T for things, etc., etc., etc. And as I think the poem in my head, I type it out, and it takes that long to do it. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. Done. My password is in. It's 17 characters long. It has numbers. It has capitals. It has symbols.
Big variety.
It's got a big variety, and it's really, really, really hard to crack because there are no words in it. It doesn't make any sense to anyone else, and yet I don't forget it because I like the poem.
It looks random.
You know, it's that could right. be, like you say, something you know, that you can easily put into, well, you could put it into a question.
Well, and the,
if the be able to guess that.
Right.
Right, because it's not the poem's name. Right.
If the password crackers use brute force trying every letter combination, they'll still get it, but by mixing upper and lower case, putting symbols in, you're
and making it 17 characters long,
you're adding to the complexity.
It will take them forever. Forever.
The password on our network is 23 characters.
See?
So they can sit out in front of my house till whenever.
Right.
And
that's one of the requirements of WPA, which is the good security you should be using on your wireless network. I think WEP was 5 characters.
Yeah, and WPA is good. WPA 2 is better.
Yeah, WEP can be broken in about 5 seconds, use it. You know, we're running into problems now because video games, I've heard the Nintendo DS only does WEP.
Yep.
So that if you have one of those on your network, you have to have an unsecure network. Or you put up a triple router to be able to have an unsecure segment and a secure segment.
Dan, my partner, took his Linksys router and has now got it running Linux.
Nice.
Put these patches.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is that, the open router standard?
Yep.
It's still got WAP and all that stuff. I mean, it looks just like it. But he's going to convert ours. Before he was going within his intranet.
Yep.
Going from one to the other,
yep.
Lose packets.
Yep.
He said since he got faster, this in his intranet,
yep.
No more lost packets. He goes, believe it or not, my internet is running faster.
Yeah.
Because it's running Linux.
It's running Linux. It's faster. There's less overhead. Unix was designed to run the internet. Hello, pay attention.
The government's still using it in some cases.
Yep. 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 So yeah, that's.
I'm really anxious to.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, to get it converted over because the interface still looks the same.
Right.
And you're putting in the password and everything else. But it's just instead of running Windows, it's running Linux.
Yeah. I tell people that all the time. They all say, you know, I'd like to run Linux, but my shop runs Windows. Or I'd like to run a Mac, but my shop runs Windows. I tell them on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. I run Linux all day long. Nobody knows it. I trade documents. I trade spreadsheets. I trade PowerPoints. I trade video. I trade audio.
It is a little extra work for you to save it as a PowerPoint file.
I can set up OpenOffice to do that as the default. And at work, I have because that's what everybody else uses.
I've set that for folks.
Yeah.
They have loved it. I had one lady, she's sitting there saying, oh, I got to do up the papers and the writing and everything else. And to sit there and buy Microsoft, you know, it's going to be $300-$400. And I just don't have it right now. I says, would you like something that'll work just as well? Maybe even a little better.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, what's it going to cost me? I says, free.
Cookies.
She goes, you're kidding, right? She goes, there's got to be some catch in it. No. OpenOffice. If you listen to the show, I says, she got it. She wound up doing up this paper. And she was so worried, you know, constantly calling me a couple times. Now, are you sure that my professor's going to be able? I said, trust me. I got a call Friday.
Yep.
Dave, he said it was no problem. I even got an email back from him saying he had read it, and he said, what a great paper. Thank you very much. She goes, I can't believe it.
Yep.
I said, I told you. Yep. And she's looking now into doing the PowerPoint and everything else.
And it all works. It's all good and easy. Exactly. All right. And that's the power of free software. Hey, speaking of free software.
Yes. Good segue.
Thank you very much. The still insanely crazy Chris Reich, who does our podcasts every week and does such a phenomenal job on it.
Guilty.
Has a new segment that he debuted last week. So this is not the debut, but it is the second outing for the freeware. We don't have a good name.
It's take two.
It is take two. We don't have a good name for it. We don't have an intro or an outro, but it's all about freeware. So, Chris, what's our freeware of the week?
It has to do with virus checking, so it's a pretty boring one compared to last week. Last week we talked about Miro, which
right.
if you
so
uploaded
cool.
it, oh, yeah, there's just so much on it. I was up large part of the evening, and I say into the wee hours of the morning, catching up on news, but... Miro was exciting, and today it's going to be a boring one. ClamAV. ClamAV is one of the options that we all have for scanning for viruses. Now, it's available for the Mac platform under the name ClamXAV, and I presume that the X stands for the Mac OS X. Nick is nodding his head, so I'm gathering he knows better than I do. But it works great. First of all, it's no charge. That's why I'm talking about it. It's free. So get on the internet, Google it. Steve, if you wouldn't mind looking up the URL for getting ClamAV, I'd be grateful. ClamXAV.com, according to Dave. According to Steve for the Mac version. Anyway, the neat thing about ClamXAV or ClamAV, whichever one you're using, is that you can scan your documents, your files, on your hard drive or network so that you can guarantee that, A, you haven't received any viruses, and, B, that you're not going to give any out if you do any file sharing, whether it be by network, internet, or flash drive, or compact disk, or however you're going to share a file. You scan it first before you burn it to disk or before you put it in your flash drive, and then you hand it around, and you can be assured that you're going to be circulating clean files.
And if I can just break in for a second,
if you don't mind.
A lot of times I hear from Linux and Mac people who are so smug about it, well, we don't get viruses, so it doesn't matter for us. Still, the amount of processing power that this product takes, particularly on those oh-so-powerful Mac and Linux boxes, is so tiny. It makes you a good network citizen when you get something to scan it before you hand it on. Just because you can't get it doesn't mean you should be passing it on to the next person. So it's good network citizenship to be running a product like ClamAV or ClamXAV in order to keep your system clean and therefore the folks downstream from you clean.
Think of the virus as an organic one. Think of your computer virus as organic. If we've had chickenpox as a kid, you become immune.
Right.
And you can't get it again, but you can carry it to somebody else.
Right.
So that's why you want to keep your body and your files clean. Now, the cool thing that I like about, in particular, ClamXAV, because I'm running it on a Mac, is that you can tell it, keep an eye on these particular folders, and they can be anywhere on your network. So that anytime you put anything into one of those folders that are being watched, it will automatically scan the file that you just put in. So obviously you want to do that to your download folder. So as soon as your browser downloads software, it goes where the default folder is for downloading, and then ClamXAV immediately picks up and lets you know if you've got a problem with you just downloaded a virus. So it's very cool in that respect.
ClamAV is a terrific product. It's multiple pieces and parts, but it works on Linux, it works on Macs, and it works on PCs. And if you're running any kind of server on your network, you should be running it on the server.
If you're the kind of person, if you're the kind of computer user who needs to follow explicit directions, you should still be using the Security Tango. It's time-proven, it's field-tested, Security Tango works. Now, the Security Tango is not using ClamAV.
Right.
But if you're the kind of power user, or you think you are, that you can set this up yourself, and it'll only check for viruses on files. It won't do the firewall. It won't do all the other stuff that the other software on the Security Tango does. So, again, if you need to be following instructions, if you're not that savvy, stick with the Security Tango. Dave Enright's done a fantastic job filtering through the available software, and that's the stuff that you folks should be using. But Clam AV is an option for the rest of us.
Right.
And hail Fredonia.
Hail, hail Fredonia, land of the brave and free.
All right. We have an actual question.
It was very good.
Thank you very much.
I just
thank you.
I'm gonna say, you know?
More an but okay, go ahead.
No, I mean, sit there and sit there, hit the intro, see me in a dress, no singing. Yeah. Moving right on.
I wasn't even wearing the dress today.
Yeah, I know. We won't tell. This is radio.
This is radio. Nobody knows what I am or I'm not wearing.
I thought we were sworn to secrecy before the show started.
I have one question. Somebody a while back said, well, we still have the podcast of your show when it is not on the air during the football games.
Yes, we will.
Yes, and you're listening to it now.
The problem we ran into, because a couple of people were saying they weren't getting the shows, we had an ampersand.
Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you, I looked at my code, and I'm taking all the ampersands, except where was the ampersand? Was it in a name?
In a name, Stephen Marie.
That's the problem. I fixed that last night. So it looks for ampersands in the name, it looks for ampersands in the city, and it looks now, it has always looked for ampersands in the description. So now all three of them are being stripped of ampersands, so we should be all good now.
No ampersands allowed in HTML or XML code.
Right.
So now it should work, and it should automatically update.
And
a couple.
No, though. Next week, though, we will be back
live
on the air, and we will have Jerry Seward as our guest.
The mighty Jerry Seward.
On next week's show, and the week after that, we're going to have the gentleman from LifeLock.
That'll be fun.
Back to the podcasting, man. We also had a related question where people are seeing that the RSS feeds, which is the way you get the podcast on your computer, seems to be delayed in iTunes, where iTunes doesn't list them as fast. That was most likely the same problem. The ampersand was screwing the code. Because all iTunes does is point you to our website.
Right.
None of the files actually live on iTunes. iTunes is just listing our feed site for you to download it from. So now we have those ampersands fixed. That shouldn't happen again.
Right, right. I apologize. I had them. I had fixed them. I have fixed them programmatically when I go to save a file. I run it through a filter in PHP, but I had not done that to the names, and I realized that I should. So I stuck in the city, too, in case we go to, like, somebody finally calls in from Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I.
Well, what happened? Right. I mean, we had him. Look, we had that one guy call from China.
That's exactly right. And that probably, that name actually had lots of odd characters in it that I just didn't know. Apple safety issue here. Apple on Friday announced the ultra compact USB power adapter exchange program.
Say that fast three times.
That fast three times. The safety alert is aimed at all iPhone G3 owners in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and several Latin American countries. The ultra compact power adapter, which is a very long name for a very tiny device, is included with all iPhone G3s sold in those countries. The program allows users to exchange it free of charge. Apple has initiated the exchange because of a safety issue. And I quote, Apple has determined that under certain conditions, the new ultra-compact Apple USB power adapter's metal prongs can break off and remain in the power outlet, creating a risk of severe electric shock. We have received reports of detached blades involving a very small percentage of the adapter sold, but no injuries have been reported, said Apple. Probably because people go, metal in the plug. Think I won't touch it. Apple advises users who are using the ultra-compact adapter that came with their iPhone G3 to stop using them immediately until they receive a new redesigned adapter. Users should recharge their iPhone's G3 battery with the USB cable that came with their iPhone connected to a computer, or by using a standard-sized Apple USB power adapter, the one with the fold-up prongs, or with a third-party adapter designed to work with the iPhone. Replacement adapters will be available beginning Friday, October 10th, 2008. I will repeat that for those of you who are breathing through your mouths. Replacement adapters will not be available until Friday, October 10th, 2008. You can order a replacement adapter online or exchange the adapter at an Apple retail store, but not 2008. Adapters affixed to the green dot at the bottom have been redesigned.
And the redesign and the manufacture is going to take a couple weeks.
Yeah. Oh, I would say until Friday, October 10th, yeah.
Redesign,
2008.
Shipping.
And since this is only September 21st, 2008, you've got a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I wish they would have. Well, I could see them.
There are people already on the phone. Right. Oh, crap, it's not October.
Well, I wish, you know, they could have said we'll be available as soon as possible, but then that would cut down. They'd get all of those phone calls.
They get all those phone calls.
So by giving an actual date, they get,
still get
angry
the phone calls. Yeah, right.
Do all those call early because they want to get on the waiting list.
But that's
they'll start calling October 9th. Hello? Yeah. Hello? It's Thursday, October 9th.
That's been a big thing that Apple and most of the companies are doing now is they're making their accessories smaller, which makes the packaging smaller so there's less waste. You can package more in a shipping container so there's less fuel. So it's now, I guess, too tiny is the problem.
Well, too tiny and too badly made, I guess.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if the new one is bigger and therefore has more metal and therefore...
And therefore heavier.
Heavier and... I was about to say, if
folks want to wait until October 10th, 2008, and still use this, go in your drawer and pick one of those cheap extension cords that you have coiled up in the drawer, stick it in the one of the extension cord, and then use the plug on the extension cord rather than...
That's a very good idea.
And then
it does break. You never take it out again, so you don't care.
Right.
Right. Very good idea.
Thank you.
See, that's why he are an engineer. That's exactly why. So, yeah, that's not until October 10th, Friday, October 10th. 2008. So don't bother calling now. And for those of for our Norway enclave, that'll be Saturday, October 11th at 4 a.m. or whatever that ends up.
Well, no, it's probably Friday, October 10th local time.
Yeah, right. What?
10-10-08.
That's right. Google. For the second time in as many months, Gmail users saw a sudden increase in spam, and they reported the issue in the Webmail Services official discussion forum in recent days. Reported is a very mild word for what some of them were doing. On Thursday, a Google employee named Sarah, not Palin, chimed in by posting to the main thread devoted to this topic to say that the complaints were well-founded and had pointed Google toward a solution. Sorry to hear that this problem returned. Thanks to your reports, we were able to find and fix a problem in a classification system. Please let me know if you continue to experience this issue, she wrote. Gmail is used by tens of millions of people worldwide for both personal communications and as part of the Google Apps hosted productivity and collaboration suite for work. You can actually let Gmail manage your company's email. It still comes from you. It goes to you. It looks like yours, but it's being handled by Gmail. Gmail actually suffered 3 outages last month, prompting Google to extend a credit to users of the Premier Edition of apps, which costs $50 per user per year and has a 99.9% uptime guarantee for the webmail service. Google also vowed to improve its problem notification methods to better communicate with its apps Premier customers. So, yeah, we find... Spam is a delicate issue. Nobody likes it, but everybody's got a different definition of it. And
especially for people who do direct marketing.
Well, yes. But even at RIT, we have learned in the College of Business, the Saunders College of Business, we have learned to keep
E. Philip Saunders
College of Business to the Rochester Institute of Technology. We have learned to keep our spam score. The way these things work is you have a list of possible spam things, right? And that's the way Spam Assassin and all of these work. You have a list of things, and maybe you say, well, if it comes from, you know, if it has the word Viagra in it, that's really a point two. Because somebody might be talking about Viagra. But you build up the points, and then what's the threshold at which you decide this is spam? Well, we've set the threshold fairly high. And so that some spam will get through, but now each individual gets the right to set it lower for themselves. So we get rid of the stuff that's clearly spam, but anything that's borderline, you can set yours higher. So if you don't want to see it, you don't have to. And if you do, you know, you might see one or two spams, but now you're on that important breast cancer notification list.
What if I want low mortgage or cheap drugs?
Then you can set it to minus 70 or something.
Problem,
you win, yours gets done actually.
Spam. You know, if someone really sends me a mortgage offer versus an identity theft scam.
Right.
Well, see, this is where this all ties back to what we're talking about as far as the caps on internet, that if they're going to do that, then I think there's going to be a lot more demand from the consumer that, all right, if you're going to cap me here and I'm going to have to pay for more, I'm going to have to pay now for more, then you as a provider have to do a better job of not sending me and filtering out based on what I tell you is spam and filter it out.
And
that's if I'm getting all this crap downloaded to my machine, it's going to wind up, counting against my download.
Right. And if you're going to cap me, then you better cut out all those video ads that are showing up all over the place.
Yeah.
So I don't want to pay for those.
No.
I don't want to see them. You filter them out. Now, I think caps are a very, very, very bad idea. I understand why they do them. It's a lot easier than upgrading their systems. And obviously a whole lot cheaper. But I think it's bad customer service.
All right, you want to deal with another question?
No, hold on. That wasn't fun.
Yeah, go ahead. All right, why not?
Willie L. writes, is having a
problem. No last names on the radio.
I told him that.
Well, all right, go ahead, Willie. Willie writes.
All right, Willie writes. He said it was okay.
You fix it in post.
They gave me permission. When I print from the internet, the words are not spelled correctly. In fact,
it's the internet.
In fact, it just prints a stream of characters that don't make sense.
It's the internet.
But when I print a document from Microsoft Word, there is no problem. The word printing is correctly. Apparently, the problem only occurs when I try to print online. My computer just recently started having this issue. It has never done it before. How can I troubleshoot this problem?
Does he tell you what his browser is?
No, he's just running Windows XP with 256 mega memory.
Well, that's not so good to begin with. He's a very patient man.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. It's likely you upgraded your browser at some point, probably to Internet Explorer 8.
And the 8 beta.
The 8 beta.
Or even to 7.
Yeah. Well, right. And it's using an incorrect driver. Go to print setup and see what driver it's set to print to. It may be the right printer, but a different printer driver. Yeah. So you have to make sure it's going to the right printer and the right driver for that printer. We see that a lot, particularly when people had at some point multiple printers on their machine, whether all at once or, you had one, you sold it, you got another one.
Multiple printers from the same company is even worse.
And that's even worse. And you end up with multiple drivers on your system, and if it'll randomly have to pick something.
So you've got the HP 1310, and now you've got an HP 1315, and it's a different driver.
Completely different driver, as a matter of fact. So you got to make sure it's not just the right type of printer, but the exact right printer. And that may be the problem there. It also may be that it's set to the wrong, that the Internet Explorer, or whatever it is itself, is set to the wrong alphabet, the wrong, what do they call it?
Yeah, I wish you'd have copied and paste. Well, you can't copy and mechanically copy and electronically paste.
Right.
Is it gibberish, or it could be PostScript or PCL code?
Right.
So it's printing the code instead of executing the code.
Right, which would again be the wrong driver.
Yeah.
PCL 6 versus PCL 5.
Right. Or
if you have a 1310, make sure it's picked 1310. Close enough doesn't count. It has to be exact.
Right, 1310, 1311, whatever it takes. But in reality, it's got to be 1310. And if it's set to PCL or PostScript, PS, you got to make sure it's the right one of those. So there's really, if you're unwilling to delve into that area of your system, bring it to Dave or Steve, who I'm sure for a small but much-loved fee.
Reasonable
fee, mm-hmm, would be willing to fix that for you.
That's right. That's an old Benny Hill sketch, and probably even before that, too.
I don't think there's any new Benny Hill sketches in terms of they originated with him.
Popular, great products at popular prices. Well, it's $100. I like it.
Yeah, right.
That's a popular price.
It's a popular price for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Another tangent again. The Man Show, which was good its first season, they did some ish. They did some cute sketches, and one of them they did was they dressed up as airline pilots walking through an airport drunk, going into bars and drinking, and then a plane flight gets announced, and they say, "Oh, that's my plane," and they get up to go and just to watch people's reactions. Well, I ran across a Dean Martin Foster Brooks sketch, exactly the same thing. And, okay, so that was, what, 34 years ago?
Foster Brooks is from Rochester, you know.
Yeah.
And a very nice guy, a very nice guy.
Didn't drink at all, though, right?
Yeah. But,
the whole thing was a bit.
Yeah. Here's a question from Karen, who writes, powered up laptop computer, the screen was red and had a bio symbol in the middle saying that the computer was taken over by a Trojan. I started up the super anti-spyware, ran for a couple of minutes showing over 78 infections, and then it stopped abruptly and would not continue. So I shut down the computer, kept my finger on the power switch. Have not done anything since. How do I get rid of all this mess that is compromising my computer? Can I recover all my data? Can I perform the fix myself? Or do I have to bring this to a computer technician? Please help. Thanks. Well, first, Karen, just running super anti-spyware may not be enough. I would suggest doing it as part of the Security Tango at securitytango.com and run the entire Tango, and then I still have to add it onto the screen. I keep writing it down on my to-do list, and other things bubble to the top first.
Yeah, on my 100-page to-do list, I had to give up.
Yeah.
That was one of my to-dos, give up to-do list. I haven't got that one done either.
And then run super anti-spyware as part of that at the section where you run the other anti-spyware things. And unless you do all of that, the likelihood of getting rid of any of the newer viruses, Trojans, whatever you're going to call them, is very, very low. So you can't just run the program. You have to follow the procedure in the Tango and run it at the right spot.
And safe mode is getting to be an even more important step because so many things load themselves.
Yep.
That you can. That's probably what happened in this case. Super anti-spyware was trying to delete something, and it wouldn't let it and crashed. But
right.
Running in safe mode.
Just pulling the hard drive out, putting it on our test bench.
Right.
Because there's a couple of them out there, like you were saying, the newer ones right now that are so insidious that, you know, that's the only way.
Right.
I tell folks, I got to literally pull your hard drive out, put it on our test bench, just to get it through the first scan.
Right.
And then from there, I can then put it on and do it. And this is the other thing folks don't realize. I mean, I know Steve runs into it too. God love you folks. Love to get the computers back as fast as we can. But
it shouldn't take very long.
You know, they say,
no, it shouldn't, but it does. I agree with you. It shouldn't. But that's not the way the universe actually works.
The thing is, you know, and granted, we're only charging them, you know, maybe 2-3 hours, depending on what. But that's time that we're charging you. That's not the actual time that it spends on a bench.
You can't afford the time it actually takes.
Because I can sit there and have, like, 3 machines stacked up, one behind the other, and they're all literally running different scans.
Right.
And several of them are overnight each.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm not charging you for that time, but it's still time that it takes to do it.
Right. The time you're charged and the actual physical time the thing is running are way different.
People want us to come do it on site, and, well, how big is your guest room, and do you have cable TV? Because I'll be there a couple of days.
And what's for supper,
yep.
And breakfast, yep. And lunch?
Yep. I ask what they're having for dinner.
Actually, I did that once. This nice old Italian guy, and he brought out his homemade wine and the anisette and the pasta, and then fried chicken for the American boy.
Yeah.
I hate to think what happened to the computer after dinner when we actually started working on it.
Always a good idea to get your computer tech drunk before he works on your computer.
I used to get a call from my friend Simon. He'd call me up and say, Nick, what sort of beer do you like? I knew what he meant was, come over and fix my computer. The answer is always Guinness, by the way, in case any of you are out there wondering. It's Guinness. But Guinness Stout.
Brilliant!
Specifically. Brilliant!
Sorry, Chris, you'll fix that in post.
You're sitting there pulling your phone.
Oh, that.
He said Guinness. I've got 6 seconds to get these headphones off my head.
That little red peak line just flew off the screen.
Land it over here somewhere. You can pick it up later. It used to be you could go over and have a beer with a friend and maybe a second beer while the thing was working. But that was it. And you'd spend a few hours chit-chatting and all that stuff. And it would be done. Now it's a multi-day process often. And there's no shortcut if you're going to do it right. And, yeah, you're not being charged for all that time because Dave and Steve can walk away from it while it's working. But it still takes that much time. And, you know, you don't blame Dave and Steve. You blame the guys who write these things. It's their fault.
Blame your kid for downloading that fake song again.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But wait a minute. No. I won't. See, this where I disagree with you a little bit, because parents are so quick to blame their kids. And I turned to them and said, well, do you use the computer? Well, yeah, but I don't go to any of those places. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you don't have to anymore.
Your computer, and you go to any website, and it's used throughout the household. Everyone in that household is a guilty party.
Right.
And sometimes it's as simple as misspelling. You misspell a website you're going to, and you get to some site, oh, that's not what I wanted, so you type the right spelling again, it's too late.
For years, it's not true anymore, but for years, whitehouse.com, whitehouse.gov is the government website for the White House of the United States of America, for our Norwegian enclave. But whitehouse.com was a porn site which prominently featured political lookalikes in, let's just call them, compromising situations.
Hanging out of the windows of a White House.
No, you were in the rooms. You could see in the rooms. Let's just
put it
that way.
Well, you had to click a few times.
Yeah. No, you didn't. And that was the problem.
How does he know so much?
Yeah, both of you guys know an awful lot about
it. Well, here's why I know about it, because I would get frantic calls from my faculty who would be going to whitehouse.gov. And, of course, it's you normally nowadays you think .com is what you type, right? Yeah. So they type whitehouse.com, turn away from the screen, which is showing on the projector, and talk to the students for a couple minutes about some phase of government. Meanwhile, the students are going, well, all right, okay, yeah, and then teacher's thinking, they love poli-sci. This is great. And then they turn back and go, oh, my God. And, of course, the internet is broken and the machine's been taken over and yada, 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 yada. So I'd come and backspace, G-O-V, enter. There you go. Thanks, bye. And I don't even charge $35 an hour to do that.
But it's why you make the big bucks.
That's exactly right. Now, of course, it's not that way. But the reality is it's just a simple. And, of course, our machines are locked down. You're not going to get a virus from that. But our machines, but it's just a simple misspelling, and look what it takes you to, you know? Clearly,
right.
That's
a lot of the big companies will register misspellings of their own name and take you there anyway.
Right. It used to be Microsoft with a zero was a pirate site. I don't know, even know if that's true anymore, but it used to be.
Which
Steve's looking it up.
We'll know in a moment.
The second one.
Judine had,
as I remember,
she was sitting there trying to look up sneakers for her husband.
Yeah,
and wound up going looking for Dick's.
Yeah, heaven forbid you want sporting goods.
Yeah,
but she just put in Dick's.
Dick's.com. Yeah, that was probably not a good idea.
I heard a scream all the way to the back part of the shop. That's when I was down on Brighton Henry at Town Line Road, and I think they heard it on down to Jefferson Road too.
Yeah, I was looking. I was actually looking up something. My daughter was probably 6 or 7. And we were doing something with paper dolls that you could print out, and probably was 3 paper dolls you could print out, and yeah, she must have been 3 because I typed something wrong, and as the image formed on the screen, I picked my daughter up and took her out of the room. Honey, let's watch Barney or something. Let's do this. It's time for Barney in another hour.
But I've read about a good place to get pens on the internet.
No, you have not. It used to be Pen Island.
Yeah.
I actually have.
I'm so glad you said it, Nick.
I have some of their pens, actually.
I was biting my tongue.
You used to be able to get, they were the number one source for pens that were double click. You click one way and you get a pen tip, click the other way and you get a tip for the palm, the stylus tip. So you could get pen or stylus, and you would get them from penisland.com. Pen Island. That there really should have been a hyphen in there somewhere, or an underscore, or a get your pen here island.com, or something in between there, but there wasn't. A friend of mine tried, his parents sell rugs. They sell Persian rugs. And he wanted a site to sell the used ones. So he wanted to get usedrugs.com. And everybody said, no. No, that would not be good. So he added the little hyphen there as well.
And you too can have this domain for only $1.99.
Yeah.
Now it's only a squatter.
What, usedrugs.com?
Yep.
Yeah. Without the hyphen?
Without the hyphen, yeah.
Yeah. But that's the kind of thing that you're up against on the internet, you know?
There actually was a criminal case. I got a guy that was misspelling Disney character names. Mm. And since he was targeting children, they got him under child porn laws.
Right. But there's a delicate line there. There are people who, you know, on the internet, if I'm in Podunk, Illinois, I don't even know if there's a Podunk, Illinois. Don't write into me. I'll use New York, Podunk, New York. Happy now? It's just north of Westchester. Podunk, New York, and people in New York are all going, yep. Everything north of Westchester is Podunk. Yep. Yeah.
There actually is a Podunk, New York. It's Algonquin.
It's Algonquin for only idiots live here. Is that what you're saying?
Steve,
that's not nice.
You're the only guy I know, Steve, that can follow somebody's conversation in real time, looking up things on the internet as they mention them. It's scary. Positively scary.
Yeah, it's right next to Podunk Hollow and on the other side of East Podunk.
East Podunk. Man, he was 5 miles from East Podunk. You know, I've completely lost track of what I was talking about now.
Me too.
Community standards in different parts of the country?
Was I? I don't think I was. I have literally completely lost it. I got so fascinated by the fact that Steve found Podunk, New York, and that there is indeed a Podunk, New York. Where is it?
I'm looking. It was a small village near...
Was a small village? Has it been wiped out?
It looks like it might have been. I'm going here. Oh, it's about a guy that... It was a shoemaker in Podunk, and they moved to Buffalo.
Is where the elves make the shoes? The cobbler and the elves? The elves' children have no shoes? What is that? What are you doing? Never mind.
Yeah, really.
It's not important.
He's on Wikipedia.
It can't be important.
I'm reading in Wikipedia. Yeah, there is a Podunk is in Ulysses County, which is a... It's the hamlet of Ulysses in Tompkins County. Where's Tompkins County?
Tompkins County, I've heard
southern tier.
Yeah.
Actually, due south of us.
There's really a Podunk.
Oh, that's the county seat is Ithaca.
I have heard of Tompkins County. I knew I'd heard of Tompkins County.
All right. Sorry to all our listeners in Ithaca. So, can you stop by Podunk on your way to Rochester and get us something?
And apologize for it. Yeah, send us something. Somebody in Podunk must be listening. Send us a postcard or something from Podunk.
Well, perhaps you guys could bribe the audio editor to take this part out.
Yeah.
No,
this is probably the most fun we've had all day. So
I'm going to get another donut.
Enough sugar high is the problem.
It's located on... It's on the Tug...
Send us a postcard or...
It's on the Tug Hancock Creek.
Yeah, send it to...
the town of Podunk in the hamlet of Ulysses.
in the county of Tompkins.
We'll mention your name on the air.
Yeah, absolutely. I collect coffee mugs in case anybody's...
Also a Podunk, Connecticut, and a Podunk, Vermont. Two Podunks in Michigan.
Is the horse dead yet?
Yeah.
You're still beating it. But yeah, send me a coffee mug. I actually have a hat that says, where the hell is Cuckville? Cuckville, New York? Yeah. We used to go camping out there any summer weekend where it was cold and rainy, we camped. Yeah. I don't recall ever being dry on a camping trip.
Really?
Outside Oran eventually. But I do not recall being dry on a camping trip ever. I had no idea you could camp and not come back moldy. I had no idea.
Cuckville, New York has a website at epodunk.com.
He's not joking. I'm looking at the screen. epodunk.com.
Yeah. Cuckville is in Orleans County.
Over the edge.
You can't make this stuff up.
No.
Named after George Cuck, a Canadian militiaman.
Oh, those Canadians, those wacky Canadians.
Elevation 253 feet above sea level.
I need another hat. Somebody took my hat. I don't remember what happened to it.
Probably your daughter?
No. They used to have a silly hat day, and she used to take my goofy hat. I had a baseball cap with goofy ears and the bill from Disney World. And she used to take that and wear it to school every day, every year for the goofy hat day. If you're going to wear a goofy hat, might as well wear the goofy hat.
Of course.
But, yeah, she's they're past that now. Kids don't, they don't really want to make fools of themselves too often as much anymore.
No, the thing that is she's getting older, and...
I am older.
And you're going to get
I'm older. Getting older a lot faster than she is, let me tell you this right now.
Told you.
Yesterday she finally said, I was very disappointed today, Dad. Oh, why, honey? Well, Mom and I went down to DMV and it was closed. I said, did you study the book? I gave you the book like a year ago. Did you study the book? Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, okay. Apparently, I don't know if she was hiding that from me or just didn't bother to mention it. I know it. So I'll be letting everyone know, including our Norway enclave and our listeners in Podunk and in
Cuckville
and everywhere else, that when she's on the road, so you can get off. That's just whatever those days are, whatever those days are, you stay off the road. Stay off the road.
Blood pressure medication too.
And well, yeah, I'm gonna be. That's. I was thinking about a new car, and I think not now. I think I'll keep this car until the transmission has indeed fallen out of it, and then I'll get another car.
Well, what you? That happened to me once. It literally fell out.
You know, that spray foam in a can.
Yeah.
Just go around spraying it. All the way around the car.
I have seen cars that had... You can mix up... It's a theater chemical.
And Mythbusters did that. Filled a car with foam.
Well, I have seen people paint their car in this stuff so that it hardens into that foam. It's not in any way protective, but when you're in college, that stuff is free because it's just sitting around in the shop. And when you've got a dent that needs covering or you've got a... broken off something, you can build a fender out of this foam and put it on and then paint it funny, and you're a college student and you're an art student, so you think it's funky.
There's a new TV show on Discovery called Smash Lab.
I've seen Smash Lab.
They've taken Mythbusters.
Nothing's as good as Mythbusters. I'm sorry, none of them are.
They took a card and filled it with that foam to see if to prevent it from sinking if you go into a river or a lake or something.
Yeah, that'll help. Well, he floated, but he suffocated. That's so insanely useless.
Just
although I am personally looking for an old hot water tank, if anybody's got one. That's the one I want.
To the curb.
Yeah, I know. That's the one I want
to
do.
Just have to remove that pressure regulator.
Exactly. I love Mythbusters. That's a fun show.
What was the original question?
Who the hell knows? The heck knows anymore. We don't even know what we're doing. I used to love Junkyard Wars, too. My daughter and I used to sit and watch Junkyard Wars.
Robert Llewellyn was on...
Crichton
from Red Dwarf. He was on This Week in Tech a couple of weeks ago. And he's still doing Scrap Heap Challenge in England. They just don't broadcast it in the U.S. anymore. It's been 20 years since Red Dwarf went off the air.
And they're making 4 episodes.
They're making movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
he's
a huge technology geek. His one problem was that in his flat in London, he didn't have a good microphone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. We are done for another week, thank God. And I definitely want to thank Alex Vanderweel, who is our tech, Chris Reich, Steve Ray, Dave Enright. I'm Nick Francesco. We will see you, or we've already seen you, in Second Life, and we will be live next week on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, to this week only on the web from 1180 WHAM.